Welcome to Follow the Sound. I am your host, Brian Kroc. Each week, we explore different aspects of the world of music, including album reviews, concert reviews, and what we are bringing you again this week, which is This Week in Music History. And we are going March 26th on through March 30th. Pretty straightforward for our standard weekdays, but I think we got a lot of really good ones. We got a lot of good birthdays this week, actually, and I'm super excited about getting to those. Once again, if you would like to help out the show, you can go to our website at followthesoundpodcast.com and click on the Amazon banner on the right-hand side. It'll take you to Amazon. You can do all of your normal shopping. It will not cost you anything extra, and we get a little bit of a percentage off of everything that you buy, which is great for us. And like I said, it doesn't cost you anything extra, so it's very simple to do. So go to the website, click on the banner, or just go to followthesoundpodcast.com/Amazon. Also want to thank lineupmedia.fm for allowing us to do the show. They produce tons of content that you can go and find on lineupmedia.fm. Go and click through all the other great podcasts that are presented there. So, on to This Week in Music History. But to help me out with this episode is, of course, the one and only Jacob Crum.
Float like a butterfly and sting like dated terrestrial radio.
That's pretty good, actually. I liked that.
You're welcome.
So, Jake, I think we got ourselves a good show. As I said before, we got a lot of
good
birthdays.
You say that every week.
I know, but you know, I think that we always do a pretty good show. I don't think we've necessarily had a bad show when it comes to music history. Yeah, we've had slow weeks, but I don't think that it's like necessarily a bad show.
Really? Because Greg and I have been talking off microphone, and we feel that like the first show that we did in the new studio just felt all wrong.
Really?
Yeah.
See? I don't know.
I don't know if we're adjusting to like the energy of the room, or but our feng shui was definitely off kilter.
Well, I don't know what to tell you about that. I have no control over that situation.
I know. I agree. That's fine. I'm just stating that. Yeah.
I get it. I didn't think it was necessarily that bad. If you thought the show sucked, please find us on Facebook, on the Follow the Sound group. We're still trying to hit that 500 mark, and then we will review one of the worst albums ever made. You can also find us on Twitter at IFollowTheSound. Also, if you want to send us an email, you can send an email to info@followthesoundpodcast.com. That's very simple. And we always would enjoy emails and stuff getting sent to us. So, but Jake, let's get to This Week in Music History, starting off with March 26th. What do we got?
1988, Man in the Mirror becomes the fourth of what would be a record 5 number one hits from Michael Jackson's Bad album. But I don't care about that. All I care about is the most sorted clothing item, the most sorted jacket in the history of music, Brian.
What is that?
That is the jacket Michael Jackson is wearing on the Bad album cover.
Oh, yeah? Isn't the it's the leather jacket, right? It's just a straightforward leather jacket.
It's a leather jacket with all the buckles on it?
Yes.
Yes, same thing from the video?
Yes.
Yes. So, do you know the history of that jacket?
I have no idea anything about the history of that jacket.
Do you know the name Tony Alamo? Not Alamo, spelled the same, but pronounced Alamo.
No.
Okay, so Tony Alamo was a cult leader in California in the 70s and the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Without going too far into it, he also had a sweatshop of children that made bedazzled rhinestone jackets and clothing that he gave to celebrities and then sold. That was how he funded his church, mostly was by selling these Tony Alamo jackets. One of his jackets was the jacket from the Bad album cover.
Oh, wow.
And also, the first military jacket that Michael wore on tour during Bad,
mm-hmm.
where it had like all these weird medals that went like around the collar,
yeah,
was also a Tony Alamo jacket.
Hmm.
So kind of like Michael MJ's style of like dressing like a dictator came from this cult leader, Tony Alamo.
Wow.
Now here's the other kicker part. Okay, so that jacket was sold out of MJ's collection mm-hmm. on his first trial for child molestation.
Oh, wow.
There's a lot of blood on that jacket, man.
Yeah. No, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
So anyway, so I can't look at that album cover the same way anymore.
That's understandable. All right. Well, let's jump ahead a few decades to 2008, when the B-52s lose their apostrophe, becoming the B-52s minus the apostrophe. With the release of their album Funplex, the apostrophe, which is grammatically incorrect, was there because a friend designed their logo and that dude put it there.
Yes.
Yeah. Good job, dude.
Hey, sometimes things get
started.
Sometimes
you just want to put an apostrophe in places
they
don't need to be. That is fine. I've always wondered that too, because I saw the logo and I was like, what are they in possession of?
Themselves, I guess.
The B-52s what? I don't know. So maybe that was the ploy, though. Maybe that was all of their albums are like, you know, so it's like the B-52s, Funplex. Get it?
Oh, it's their Funplex. I see that.
Except that was the album they were moving on.
So no.
So then it did have meaning.
So you just killed your theory in two sentences.
That is true.
You set it up and then killed it immediately.
That is true. That's the way my mind works. I work through a problem, and even if I destroy it, then that's the conclusion I've come to. Boom. All right, let's go ahead and jump to birthdays.
Yeah, and here's one that if I said I had been waiting for it with bated anticipation, I'd be lying. I was just actually happy when I saw it.
Nice.
So 1917, Rufus Wainwright is born somewhere in Mississippi. He was known.
No.
For, yes.
Rufus Thomas.
I said Rufus Wainwright, didn't
yeah,
I?
Yeah, not the British singer.
Oh my God. Yeah. Two totally.
I was
going to
say
guys.
That's like, I was like, that's weird. He's super. Nope. That's not right. It's.
Oh man.
Rufus Thomas.
I don't even know how I did that, because I was looking at the word Mississippi when I said it.
I know. It's like,
it does not have
definitely
W.
British.
Yeah.
He's definitely not from Mississippi.
Yeah. So now that it's not Rufus Wainwright, I guess I'm just... No, seriously, Rufus Thomas.
There we go.
Born
yes.
In Mississippi in the year of our Lord, 1917. he became known as a comic for the opening acts of B.B. King and Bobby Blue Bland.
Yeah.
Heck of an opening act during the early shows on Beale Street in Memphis. He gave Sun Records their first hit was a Rufus Thomas song. It was a parody of Hound Dog that was called Bearcat. Later, he recorded at Stax Records and did the song Walking the Dog and the Funky Chicken, but let's hit Walking the Dog.
Here we go.
Mary Mac, dressed in black, silver buttons all down her back. Hollow, tipsy toe, she broke a needle and she can't sew. Walking the dog.
There's a dance to that, if you didn't know.
Oh, I know there is.
Yeah.
And do you know why I know that?
Why do you know that?
Because I know who Rufus Thomas is. Rufus Thomas, not a good dancer.
Nope.
Not a really good singer.
Mm-mm.
But a really good entertainer.
Yes, he was.
And he kind of made music when it was important to make music, because Walking the Dog came out when every other rock and roll act was either in prison or in the military.
Yep.
So he was keeping that alive. Later, also for Stax Records, he recorded The Funky Chicken and became like a really early pioneer for funk music.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't heard The Breakdown, you should go out and listen to that now. Happy birthday, Rufus Thomas.
Boom. Good job. I'm sure Rufus Wainwright's birthday will come up here eventually.
Yeah, and then I can confuse him with Rufus Thomas.
Exactly. That's just going to be great. All right, moving on to 1944. A legend in the music industry is born, and that person is none other than Diana Ross, who is, of course, born in Detroit, Michigan, and she, of course, found fame as the lead singer of the Supremes. Now, it is a well-known thing that she was not the best singer of the Supremes, but she was the eye candy that was put up front. And that's how she did that thing. That's how come they did the movie Dreamgirls, where they did basically the exact same plot.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, just did it that way. But I've always liked Diana Ross just for, yeah, she's got an interesting voice. And but she had very good stage presence. And I always admired that of her. So there you go. Not to mention she put on that one really crazy concert in New York, like where it was all raining and stuff. And she was like, I'm not going to let some rain stop me. I thought that was cool, too. So, yeah. That's what I got for that, for 1944. Then, jumping forward even a few more decades, we have someone who was born who is not a legend necessarily. no, I'm not going to be that bad on him. But in 1968, Kenny Chesney is born in Knoxville, Tennessee, but he was actually raised in nearby Luttrell. So here's what I know about Kenny Chesney. This man is country to the core. I'm not even sure he writes his own songs. I'm pretty sure he hasn't written them in a while. But at the same time, this dude somehow manages still to sell well at concerts. And that's impressive. Because if I'm not mistaken, didn't Kenny Chesney, he started off with She Thinks My Tractor's Sexy.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's had a couple of real patriotic songs. And then I think the last one he had that was a major hit was Red Solo Cup, which I know he didn't write. But yeah, Kenny Chesney, still trucking. In fact, that's the name of his next tour. I don't know if that's true or not, but I'm still going to say
probably
that.
Not.
Kenny Chesney, mm-hmm. The still trucking tour.
Probably Kenny Chesney and others.
Yeah, I don't know that one for sure. But happy birthday, Diana Ross. Happy birthday, Kenny Chesney.
All right. March 27th, 1958, stereo albums are introduced, and somehow in 2018, we still produce in mono.
Weird. Wait, are you talking about us, or are you talking about the music industry?
No, I mean us.
Yeah, that is true. We are producing in mono, but that's because it doesn't really matter for us.
I mean, it doesn't, but...
And it's a digital format anyway. It's not like somebody's listening to this. Man, I really wish they'd produce in stereo.
Yeah, I know. I agree.
Look, if I really wanted to get fancy, I could record in stereo. It's not that hard to do. I just got to set it up that
way. You know, it's...
And then you know what? I'll have even more fun. I'll slightly pan everybody differently so that way it sounds like you're in the middle of a conversation of a cool little group in a studio, and that's how I would do it. But that takes a lot more time, and I don't feel like doing that.
I did not put this in here because of this, but I did just remember I have a new album from a guitar player who has a guitar that has a pickup for every string, and the idea of making that, of having a luthier make that guitar, was that he panned every string slightly differently in the stereo mix. So that, like, the low E string is all the way left, you know, the high E string is all the way right.
Yeah.
And I haven't listened to it yet, so.
That sounds cool. I'd like to listen to that.
I don't think it's going to be anything more than a gimmick. I doubt that in like 10 years everyone's going to be like, yeah, EDM in surround sound is amazing. I don't know.
I've actually heard that a lot of the stuff that, you know, like because you listen to EDM, you may hear it out of speakers and stuff like that. But apparently a lot of EDM is meant to be listened to with headphones. And I've just never really done that, so I wouldn't know like how they do that kind of stuff. But I watched a video today about producers for EDM and how they will really mess with the panning a lot to get sort of a cool little effect thrown in there, like just for people with headphones. But in a like if you're at a venue or something listening to it, you'd never pick up on it.
Yeah.
Because it's just blasting you right in the face, so. I like it, though. I know it's weird. I'm getting more into, like, some of the EDM stuff right now, and I don't really know why. I mean, it's not something that I would actively buy.
I mean, I can tell you why. It's because hip-hop is so bad right now.
Oh, that could be it. But I think it's because I'm finding a lot of these sort of smaller independent mm-hmm. DJs who are doing, like, really, really interesting stuff with just songs. So, I don't know. I'm broadening my horizons is what I'm trying to do. But let's go ahead and move on to 1972. Grand Funk fire their manager Terry Knight, who promptly sues them. Grand Funk demanded a full royalty accounting and accused Knight of double dipping as manager and producer, while the trio had not been getting all of the money they had earned. For his part, Knight would claim that the band had only 3 months left on their contract with him when they first took him to court and could have been free with half of the legal aggravation. The trio ultimately won their separation from Knight, but at a heavy cost. Yeah. It's crazy.
I mean, I guess it sucks when, you know, as a band you're getting screwed at. I mean, it sucks anytime that your representation is just, like, hosing you.
Yeah.
With everything. And then you're left not being able to really do much about it because it costs you more money to get the money you're owed.
Mm-hmm.
I've had that happen before.
Yeah.
You know. I had a dump truck, or excuse me, not a dump truck, a garbage truck run into my house.
Yeah. It's crazy.
I know. It was crazy.
You know it's not crazy? Birthdays.
Birthdays?
Birthdays.
Okay, then.
Can be crazy, but for the most part. Yeah,
but
not
we
the
do
way
have
we
one
them.
Story before the birthdays.
Oh, yeah, oh, that's true. You know what? Yep, you're right. Never mind. My fault. Go ahead.
Yeah, we're going to rewind it to 1986. Sammy Hagar makes his first appearance as Van Halen's lead singer when the group begins their tour in Louisiana. And here is Van Halen right here with Right Now.
There you go.
In spite of how self-righteous and dumb the music video for that song is, I still love that song.
See, now here's the best thing for me. I've seen Sammy Hagar in concert a few times now, and he puts on a heck of a show. So yeah, I dig it.
You dig the Red Rocker.
All right, I dig then. The Red Rocker, and he actually is a big fan of St. Louis, so he loves to come here and perform, and he, like, that place, the amphitheater is packed.
It really
when
is.
When he plays. I mean, it really is. It is crazy how packed it actually gets, and everybody is screaming every line to every song and just going insane, and, like, everybody wears red because, of course, everybody has something red in this city.
I wonder why.
So yeah, I actually really like Sammy Hagar, and he puts on a really good show. Well, that song right there, though, he usually does slow.
Really?
And kind of like, he sings the lines, but he doesn't do it in that sort of fast, upbeat way. It's kind of more sung as a tribute to like other members of his band and stuff, like who have passed away and like that kind of stuff. It's and there's like a video montage that plays in the background, but yeah, I like Sammy Hagar. What can I say?
I don't know.
There are some people in this office who are some massive Sammy Hagar fans, though. So hopefully the next time he comes through, I can hook up the office with some tickets. That'd be nice. All right, what do we got next?
We got birthdays next.
Birthdays. All right, so I actually got both of these, and both of them happen on the same day. Which was 1970, actually. And the first one is somebody who personally influenced me and my music. And that person is Brendan Hill. Now, you may be like, you know, who's Brendan Hill? I've never heard of that dude. Is he like brother of Jonah or something? No. Brendan Hill is the drummer for Blues Traveler.
No.
Yes, and he was born in London, England, which is, I did not know that, actually. I did not know that he was born in London, England. But Brendan Hill recorded on like a bunch of their albums and stuff like that. But for me personally, Blues Traveler was that first album that I remember listening to and trying to play drums with and like trying to learn how he played everything. So that right there, for me, that's the one I remember. I can still do like every song from that album. And we've reviewed that album on our show. And you can go listen to that as Jake and I went through Four by Blues Traveler.
But I mean, yeah, if you want to hear us having just constant eargasms, go back and listen.
It was totally like a praise fest of the brilliance of that album. And it's like, oh, man, it was so good. But then again, when Jake and I get together and we do like an album review, that's usually, you know, when it's just the two of us, it's like we usually pick something that we absolutely love. And then we just like go to town listening to it. So, I mean, we are having a blast when we do those kind of album reviews. And you can find that on the Blues Traveler 4 album that we reviewed several months ago.
Yeah.
But yes. So first birthday, 1970, Brendan Hill. Second birthday on 1970, we have Mariah Carey. Now, of course, Mariah Carey was born in Huntington, Long Island, New York. She is well known for her massive success in the 80s and 90s. Mainly it was the 90s, right? I seemed she might have had some stuff in the 80s, but I remember her primarily in the 90s. And, of course, more so well known for hitting those incredible high notes, those whistle tones that she used to do like crazy. Then she went off and like married some dudes and kind of went a little crazy, and now she's kind of a, not a joke. I mean, she's not a joke of an artist, but at the same time, she's like, everybody's just like, oh, you've fallen
well,
a bit.
She had that one Christmas concert.
Yeah.
Where like her voice was completely
shut
out.
Yeah.
And I'm not making fun of her.
I'm trying to be, you know, pretty respectful. It's just that I'm trying to be honest as well. So like she's fallen off a bit in her celebrity fame. But then again, she did shoot back up again when she did the very first Carpool Karaoke with James Corden, shot that thing into massive, massive appeal.
Which one is your favorite?
Of the Carpool Karaoke's? Yeah. Oh, man, that's kind of a tough one to do. But actually, I mean, the one that I've probably listened to the most was actually... just listening to the music and stuff was Harry Styles. Weirdly enough, it was Harry Styles. Kelly Clarkson's was actually really good as well. But yeah, some of the other ones, I don't know, I didn't really care for. I don't care for the ones that are like bands for the most part.
Close second, though, was the Chili Peppers for me.
They were entertaining.
They were really fun.
Yeah. The Foo Fighters I didn't think was that good, actually. Mm-hmm. It's like, because I just thought it was goofy. But what do you got?
I'm going to tell you my favorite.
Go ahead.
Stevie Wonder.
Oh, yeah.
Because when Stevie Wonder calls, what's it?
James Corden.
James Corden's wife.
Yes.
And talks to her on the phone, and he gets choked up.
Yes.
Like, gets brought to tears.
That was pretty good,
because
actually.
Stevie Wonder's just being really sweet.
Yeah.
And singing a personal serenade to his wife.
Yeah.
And putting James' name in it.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was really good. I did enjoy that one. They're all generally pretty good. But weirdly enough, the Harry Styles one is the one I've listened to the most. And I think it's because it kind of shocked me on how good he actually was. It's like, because I'd heard him sing, I'd heard the songs before, but I don't think I'd ever really listened to him sing live. And so I was fascinated by how good he actually sounded on there. And not to mention the songs from his solo album are really freaking good. You know? So, yeah. That was the one that shocked me the most. And when something shocks me, that's when I generally pay attention a lot more. I mean, that's the way I am with any form of music that I listen to. Something that grabs my attention, I'm going to listen to it a lot. So, yeah.
But happy birthday, Mariah Carey.
And happy birthday, Brendan Hill. So, let's get on to March 28th, though. What do we got for the first story?
1964, America's sweetheart, heavyweight boxing champion at the time, Cassius Clay, cover of Stand By Me, hits the charts at number 102, number one in our hearts, and falls off the charts next week.
Nice.
I've never heard it. I did look for it. I did not find it.
Yeah, we don't have a clip of it, so
Not saying it can't be found. I'm just saying I did not find it.
Yeah. So if you can find it, please let us know. Post it to the Facebook group, and we will all like it, and you will be the celebrity for the day.
And how life works, you just wait. Like, Dale is going to be posting that single.
Yeah.
He'll have found it in a record
Dale's
shop.
Dale's going to be like, I've got that record in my collection already.
A month from now.
Dale, I'm still trying. I still want to get you on the show. I just need to schedule that. So, yes, please.
And we've got to get a turntable in here.
Yeah, we got to get
it. Because we're going to play actual vinyl.
That's easy. Oh, yeah, we can totally do that in here, too. That's the easy part. Getting vinyl in here is going to be super simple. But, yeah, what do we got next? Oh, we got mine. 1978, Alice Cooper appears on The Muppet Show, where he performs Welcome to My Nightmare and School's Out. He also offers to give the Muppets fame and riches if they'll sign their souls over to him. Kermit is horrified. Gonzo spends the entire episode looking for a pen. Now, people might be like, well, the Muppets, what was he doing on the Muppets? Well, this was the Muppets like back in the day when they were on a primetime show that was hilarious and pushed the envelope a bit.
Oh, man, it was really edgy for, like...
Especially for Muppets.
Well, not just for Muppets, because, you know, now everyone thinks, like, the kids show and everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, for network television in the 70s,
mm-hmm.
prime time, it was really edgy.
Yeah, agreed. Not to mention they had some really great music on that show,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, they did.
So, we still do some of the songs that they played from Electric Mayhem and stuff. Like, they still pop into my head from time to time. But, yeah. Boom. All right, what do we got for birthdays?
1955, Reba McEntire is born in McAlester, Oklahoma. Enough said.
Well, I remember it all very well. Looking back, it was the summer I turned 18. We lived in a one-room run-down shack on the outskirts of New Orleans. We didn't have money for food or rent, to say the least, we were hard-pressed. Then Mama spent every last penny we had to buy me a dancing dress. Well, Mama washed and combed and curled my hair, and she painted my eyes and lips. Then I stepped into a satin dancing dress that had a split from the side clean up to my hip. It was red velvet trimming and it fitting me good. Standing back from the looking glass, there stood a woman where a half-grown kid had stood. She said, here she wants his fancy, don't let me down. She said, here she wants his fancy, don't let me down. Mama got a little bit of perfume on my neck.
I have always liked that song.
And then I saw the tears.
So, man, that's good. I always liked Reba.
I didn't.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Like, I didn't get her for the longest time. I had to get old enough to have troubles.
Yeah.
To be able to connect with the music.
That's understandable. You know, I mean, for me, for some reason, like, I mean, I remember listening to her music and thinking, man, it's like, she's different than a lot of other country artists that I'd come across at the time. And then I know later on she did, like, the TV show and, like, that kind of stuff. You know, she starred in a couple of movies here and there. But, yeah, for me, like, she was always the – I don't know. I remember that song. I remember her singing, and I remember her just having that great sort of powerful voice that she has for country music. But, yeah.
That TV show was pretty atrocious. Even when it was on television, it was
– Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, there you go. Happy birthday, Reba McEntire. Let's see here. Moving on up to 1986, some of you will actually recognize this name. I'm not sure a lot of you will, but some of you might. And that is Stephanie Germanotta was born in New York City. Of course, she was born that way with her poker face and a few other. I'm blanking on song titles. Either way, Lady Gaga was born in 1986, she would bounce around in the New York music scene for a while there, just playing in small clubs before really shooting very, very quickly into superstardom and then going on one of the largest tours that had ever been created and one of the most expensive tours that had ever been created. And then, you know, the thing about her, though, that I've always found fascinating is that one, I mean, I've never really connected with her music. At least the early stuff I really didn't connect with. I was like, okay, whatever. It's kind of clever. But she has always done something different the next time around. And so the fact that she came out with like a really subdued sort of, you know, real raw kind of album, I thought was fantastic. And, she's performed with all of these other like great, like jazz singers and stuff like that too. I mean, she's really gone out of her way to be a multi-genre artist, and I really respect that. I think that's great. So, yeah. That's all I got. That's all for Stephanie Germanotta. I think I'm pronouncing that right. Either way, happy birthday, Lady Gaga. March 29th. What do we got?
Going back to 1795, Beethoven makes his Vienna public debut at the city's Burgtheater when he is the soloist at the premiere of Piano Concerto No. 2.
Nice. Anything else?
Yeah, I mean that was his big debut. You know, he went from the small clubs to the big venues.
That's when he shot to superstardom relatively quickly over a few years. No, I mean we can't really like the impact of Beethoven on music. It cannot be understated. I mean, he was influential. Like he's still influential. He is still influencing the music that is created to this day, even if they don't know that it's actually being influenced by him. I mean, it's just that simple. Not to mention, he has a very tragic story. Maybe not as tragic as Mozart, but at the same time, still extremely... I mean, the fact that he, like, went deaf and stuff, like, later on in his career and, like, had to, like... write everything without being able to hear it and then conduct without being able to hear it. Like, that is a man who knows music inside and out and doesn't actually need to hear it.
Yeah.
It's like everything was in his head. It's crazy. It's just absolutely insane.
Oh, we did a story on a piano virtuoso whose name I can't remember, Canadian piano player.
I'm blanking on that one too.
Anyhow, he never practiced.
Oh, yeah?
Like, when he was playing concert venues, he never practiced. He would just look at sheet music.
Wow.
That was his practice, was just imagining it in his head, was audiating it.
Nice.
Anyhow.
I like it.
That's a muscle. If you're a musician, you should flex it.
Yep, that is true. All right. A few centuries later, some other stuff happened. 1973, Dr. Hook and the Medicine Show, who of course had the hit with the Shel Silverstein penned the cover of Rolling Stone, appear on the cover of Rolling Stone. So there you go. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Eye patch and all.
Yes. So I think it's a good song too. I've always enjoyed that one. But yeah, that's all I got for that. That's an incredible little tidbit. I like it. What's next?
Dream big, children. 1944. Oh, wait, we got birthdays. And here's the birthday. 1944. Terry Jacks is born in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada.
Yes.
Yeah.
What did he write?
He wrote Seasons in the Sun.
He wrote Seasons in the Sun, which we were tempted to get the clip for and play, but then decided not to.
Because
it's kind of an energy killer.
Yeah, it would put us into a coma. Really good song if you want to get put into a coma.
Yes, that is true.
I like chill music, but...
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of want to entertain people too. So.
Now, I wanted to get an audio clip for the next one because it's always funny to play something from this cat. And that is 1947, Bobby Kimball, who is, of course, the front man for Toto, is born in Orange, Texas.
Orange.
God bless the rains down in Africa.
You know, Toto's a really great band.
Toto is a really great band. They just, like, kind of went off the rails a little bit when they're like, hey, we're going to do a song about Africa. Okay.
Why? Well, why is that off the rails?
It just is. It just, it's one of those things where it's like, I mean, you look at, Paul Simon's Graceland album.
Yeah.
Tons of influence from African music and all of that. But, like, only references Africa, like, once in, like, the entire album. And the rest of it, it's, like, just all this sort of other random stuff. It's like, but Toto is, like, that's on the nose with that. So, but I do love the intro, that
It's a really,
you know, I wanted to point out to you, my dad actually said it's hilarious when we sing on the show.
Okay.
He said we're pretty good.
Oh, well, I take that as a huge compliment because your dad has a good ear.
Yeah, that is true. Dad's also got a great voice.
So anytime I don't make him cringe by belting out a tune.
I've still been wanting to get him on the show, too. I'd love to do a music history one with him, so I think it'd be great. Dad, I know you're listening to this, so let me know when you can make it to a show. We record on Tuesdays.
But, hey, Toto is an exercise that a band that's ugly can still make it.
True.
Because
very true.
They were just session musicians who had enough connections to pull it off.
Yeah.
And they did, and we're the richer for it.
That is true. That is also true. All right, what do we got next?
Our next birthday, we have a beautiful person.
Yes.
1959, Perry Farrell is born. Pertez Bernstein in Queens, New York City. He, of course, is a frontman for Jane's Addiction and sometimes other bands.
Yes.
But this is my favorite Jane's Addiction song right here. It's called Ocean Size.
Yeah, I'm going to fade out on the guitar solo. That's just what I'm going to do. You know, it takes a lot of guts to put a guitar solo in the middle of a song, especially like after the first chorus. So, just saying.
After a 30-second intro, four lines of a chorus? Yeah, it does.
Yeah, that takes some real guts to do that.
Yeah, Jane's Addiction on their albums does everything right.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I don't know if you've ever sat down and listened to a whole album. They do everything right.
Well, there you go.
So, just FYI, they've got a big thumbs up from me, from the Chrome.
Yes. Okay, March 30th, the first thing we got. Jake, what is it?
First thing on our last day.
Yes.
1995, Wu-Tang Clan rapper Old Dirty Bastard takes, or is it Big Baby Jesus? Well, it was ODB then. So, yeah, we'll go with that.
Yes.
Old Dirty Bastard, he takes an MTV news crew along with him in a ride in a stretch limo when he stops to pick up food stamps, proving that the ID card on the cover of his solo album is, in fact, real. The album was released 2 days prior, and the publicity stunt seemed to pay off.
Wow. That's interesting. I like it.
Yeah. He only got the card because he had yet to file taxes.
Oh, yeah?
Because that previous year, he did make enough money to not qualify, but anyhow.
Yeah. Yeah. I get it.
ODB, one of my favorite people ever.
Yes. So, going to move to birthdays.
Okay.
And this one, probably one of the most influential dance rappers ever. 1962, the one and only MC Hammer is born in Oakland, California. His birth name is Stanley Burrell. But he is dubbed Hammer when he becomes a bat boy for the Oakland A's, since he looked like Hall of Famer Hammerin' Hank Aaron. Yeah, MC Hammer.
Little Hammer.
Now, of course, he went on to become a pastor and a couple of other things, too. Eventually performed with Psy, doing a mashup of Can't Touch This and Gangnam Style at an award show. And that's the last I've heard of MC Hammer, actually, except for the fact that I know someone who is one of his dancers.
I mean, he had like 80 at
yes,
the time,
that
right?
It's true. So. But yes, I MC Hammer is just one of those dudes who pops up. Like, you know, you never know when MC Hammer is going to pop up.
I mean, if you were a hip hop dancer in 1990, chances are,
yes, you are going to be working for MC Hammer with the pants, with the MC Hammer mm-hmm. pants.
You know, all right, here's the thing.
Yes.
Okay, so MC Hammer, blah,
happy
blah, blah.
Birthday, MC Hammer.
You remember Mad TV,
yes.
Television show, right?
Yes.
You remember all the stupid, really terrible sketches that they had?
Yes, lots of them.
Yeah. Do you remember MC Hamster?
I do not.
It was an MC Hammer parody, except that it was a hamster who had gotten out of his cage and saying, "Can't catch me."
Oh, God. That sounds horrible.
It's like it's so dumb, but like a lot of Weird Al songs,
yes.
it's now the primary source in my head.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, for that. So, like, when people say MC Hammer, I think of whoever it was. I can't remember the actor's name now from Mad TV in the parachute pants and this really bad hamster costume that was thrown together by some, you know, wardrobe lady in about 25 minutes.
Nice.
And then just like Jim Carrey busting in and as Fireman Bob or whatever, Bill or whatever the heck his
yeah.
name was, and like just destroying the sketch and then commercial break. So
wow.
MC Hamster.
That's funny. Oh, God. Let's get to the next birthday already.
Artie Lang, by the way, from the Howard Stern Show, was the guy who would pitch all of those.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because he was nice. Too much of a cokehead and too lazy to actually write anything through the week. So when they came into the pitch thing, he'd go, "All right, how about Baywatch, but with Babe the Pig? We'll call it the Babe Watch." And that was his pitch. And
wow.
and that got made. That's
nice.
Like the dumb thing is that most of the stuff he pitched ended up on the show anyhow.
Wow.
We have another birthday.
We got another birthday.
Huge rabbit hole. 1968, Celine Dion is born in Quebec, Canada.
Yes, we have two Canadians on the show that we are talking about. That's because there's only a few famous Canadians that we can talk about that are music-oriented, at least. But, yeah, no, that's pretty good. I mean, people like to give crap to Celine Dion, but I mean,
which I kind of
let's face it. Mm-hmm. I mean, she is really over the top, and like she's known for singing like those super ballads and stuff. But at the same time, I mean, she's got an incredibly powerful voice.
And I think every lesbian couple at a wedding is required to dance to one of her songs.
Oh, God. I don't know that one.
Yeah, if you've never been at a Celine Dion concert.
Yes, but anyway. I think it's funny that she gets kind of like blasted for stuff, especially with like SNL and like all those who did the, you know, the greatest singer in the world. But I mean, you can't really, you cannot deny the fact that Celine Dion is a talented singer.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Like, it's just that simple. She is an incredibly powerful singer, but, you know. It's she's Celine Dion, so it doesn't help that she's like French Canadian, and you know, people naturally just seem to dislike French Canadians.
I think the weird thing about it was I'm pretty sure that her management were they most of their talent was like opera stars.
Yeah, that would make sense.
I think the talent agency she was with. So I think just a lot of the promotions that they put together for her, they're like, well, this worked for Pavarotti, so. Yeah.
That makes sense.
I think that's where she went wrong. She probably needed to get more hip representation.
Yep. Now, on to our final birthday of the evening, and of which, actually, yes, this has turned out to be a pretty short show, but I'm perfectly fine with that because you guys got important things to do. But the last birthday of the week goes to 1979. Nora Jones is born. Gitali Nora Shankar in New York City. Because if you didn't know, she is the daughter of Ravi Shankar, not the one. The other daughter of Ravi Shankar has kind of taken up the mantle of Ravi's like musical work and stuff like that and Indian music. But Norah Jones was born in New York City, but she actually takes her name from her mother, who was Sue Jones. So she became Norah Jones. And she went to school in like a couple of different places, but I know she went to a music school, I believe, in Texas. And like just sort of went off and did a couple of things. And then all of a sudden she shot to fame when she released an album. And that album goes a little something like this.
Left you by the house of fun. I don't know why I didn't come. I don't know why I didn't come. When I saw the break of day.
So yeah, I wish that that's Norah Jones. I've always liked Norah Jones. I've always thought she had a fantastic voice. But yeah.
So I was thinking this entire time in my head that Ravi Shankar had like 17 kids.
How many kids did he have?
Three.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know two of them are daughters.
Yes.
So I don't know who the other one is, though.
He had a son that played sitar and followed him on tour until he died of pneumonia in 92.
Oh, wow. That's sad.
So, yeah.
But yeah, Norah Jones is still out touring and stuff like that. I know she's done a few cameos on movies and that kind of stuff. Like she appeared in Ted? The one about the mm-hmm. talking bear and some other stuff. But I know she's released a bunch of different albums, you know, trying to broaden her genre and stuff like that. But yeah, I've always thought that Norah Jones was sort of a bright little blip on the musical radar when she showed up, because nobody was doing jazz that was popular at the time. And she kind of brought it back to a forefront, which was quite nice. But yeah. But that's all we got for this week in music history. I hope you've enjoyed that. I know it's a quick show. That is perfectly fine. We brought it in under an hour, Jake. Woo! So if you want to help out the show, of course, go to the website, click on the Amazon banner, or just go to followthesoundpodcast.com/Amazon and do all of that other stuff that I previously said. Find us on Facebook at the Follow the Sound group or on Twitter at iFollowTheSound. And, of course, check out lineupmedia.fm for a bunch of other great podcast shows. I have been your host, Brian Kroc. And, of course, has been with me the one and only Jacob Crum.
One and only. And I'm going to keep it that way.
Yes, keep it that way. But remember, Jake, if you hear it, follow the sound.
This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.